Good morning. I'm so excited to see you all. Did you know that we only have two meetings left? After today, so three, but yeah, only two. This year has seriously flown by. It's kind of crazy. So, just so you know that we have two meetings left, and you can kind of be prepared for when it ends. And if you have friends that are in your group that haven't been coming, you might want to encourage them, like, hey, we only have two left. You should come for the last two at least. But I know, like, this has been like the craziest cold season ever. I don't know what the deal is, but everybody has been sick for long periods of time. So I'm just hoping that we'll all get better soon. So there's that. Next Thursday, we have our last, it's the last one, right? The last LMNOP, Let's Moms Night Out, Please. And it's here at the church from 7 to 9, and it's going to be a forum talking about how to take good pictures with your camera. So, like, tips and tricks, how to take awesome pictures of your kids with your phone. Sorry, that's what I meant. The camera on your phone. Because that's the only way I take pictures, and I'm sure there are a lot of other people out there. It's just so convenient. So if you want to know how to take better pictures of your kids, or you just want to come and hang out with some moms without your kids and have some snacks and some good conversation, then you should come. So 7 to 9, next Thursday, the 21st, here at the church, and it'll be in the community room, which if you just walk in the doors, you go straight, and it's that room. It's just straight ahead. Okay, lastly, I know we have one new baby, Koi. And what's his name? Noah. Oh my gosh. He is so cute. He's 4 weeks old. So thank you for coming. I'm so glad that you're here. And do we have any other new babies that are here today for the first time? No? All right. Well, with that, I'm going to invite our speaker up. Our speaker today is Rebecca Bloomfield, right? Okay. And she's the executive director at St. Child. And she'll tell you more about what St. Child is. But before I hand her over, I just want to give you guys a little heads up about what we're doing today. So part of our Sprouts mission statement is that we serve others. And we serve others here when we bring food for each other, when we bring new meals for moms. But we also like to serve in the community. And so we did a service project in the fall, and now we're doing another one. And so basically, we'll be collecting items for St. Child. And Rebecca will tell you more about that, and then I'll come back up at the end and tell you more about what you specifically can do. And she'll probably touch on it as well. So yeah, we're really excited. So I'm just going to pray for our meeting really quick, and then we'll get started. Lord, I just thank you so much for today, and I thank you for just the moms that were able to come, and I pray that they will be just refreshed and able to relax and just enjoy this time. And I pray for Rebecca, Lord, that you would just really speak through her about this awesome ministry and just how it's changing these women's lives and their babies' lives. I just think it's so important, and we're just so grateful that we get to hear about it today. And I just pray that you will just bless this meeting. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.
All right, ladies. Well, I am really excited to be here. I've been looking forward to this for since Tara invited me to come. And so I want to start and just share a little bit about me and my background, and then we're going to show you a video of the house. So you're actually going to get to take a tour of the home and get to see it. It's beautiful. And I'll talk a little bit about our program and some of the young women in the house and give you a picture of what it is that we do. So as she said, I'm Rebecca Bloomfield. I'm the executive director at St. Child. I've been with St. Child for about 2.5 years. I am a Portland native. My husband and I live in Tigard with our fur baby, who we just got a few weeks ago. I have degrees in social and behavioral studies, as well as management and organizational leadership from George Fox University. And my background prior to coming to St. Child was in counter human trafficking. So I worked with local and federal law enforcement, local and federal prosecutors, DHS, other community organizations, and did direct service and advocacy for children who were either currently or had recently been trafficked, which set me up really well for the work that we do at St. Child. There's a big overlap in those populations. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I really want to give you a chance first to get to see the home. I couldn't adequately describe it with words, so we have a video that we're going to show. And then I'll come back up and chat some more.
St. Child serves 14 to 24-year-old unsupported pregnant young women. So girls are referred to us from a lot of different sources. Sometimes they come to us from hospital emergency rooms, high school counselors. Young women also hear about us from family members or friends, other friends who have been through St. Child. And sometimes they just look us up on the internet. So sometimes they Google Teen Pregnancy Portland and find St. Child. A high number of the young women that we serve are coming to us from either homelessness or a high degree of housing insecurity. So that could mean that they're sleeping on a friend's couch, they're living in a warming shelter where they come in and they have a mat on the ground in a gymnasium or a church auditorium and they can stay there in the evening. Young women come to us with a variety of personal obstacles. Many of them are struggling with addiction. Heroin addiction and addiction to methamphetamine is something that we see pretty frequently. Also, a high degree of the young women that we serve have experienced commercial sexual exploitation. So that means that they've been trafficked by a pimp, generally, and I see a high amount of that happening typically while they're still minors. But that really makes sense when you think about how vulnerable of a young woman they are, that they're coming from homelessness, that addiction is present in their life, that there's mental health struggles that could possibly be present. It makes sense that they would be vulnerable for someone to exploit them. So young women can stay at St. Child for up to a year after their baby is born. They can come as soon as they have a confirmed pregnancy. So for some young women, that means they're 6 weeks pregnant, 8 weeks pregnant. And for other young women, that means they're 38 or 39 weeks pregnant. Really at any point in time during their pregnancy, they can come. And then they have about a year after their baby is born to stay with us. It's really more about moving towards goals and achieving some stability in their life. It's about are they ready to be successful and independent on their own? That's kind of how we gauge how long they can stay. But it's also important to think about that a goal for a 14-year-old who's just had a baby is going to look different than a goal for a 24-year-old who's just had a baby. And so we really work to do individualized planning for each young woman. So when they come in, we do an initial plan and talk about what are your long-term goals going to be. And then we do weekly goal setting meetings where they get to meet with an advocate and our resident coordinator, and they talk about, okay, so your long-term goal is to get your own apartment. So what does that look like? What do we need to have happen? The house is located in the Cedar Mill area. We're very, very fortunate to be in a home that's been provided to us by Cedar Mill Bible Church. We're really blessed by the support that we receive from them. St. Child really seeks to give comprehensive services to each young woman that we serve. We're looking at what are the gaps that we need to fill in for each young woman, and then how do we help her gain the skills that she's going to need to be a successful, independent woman for the rest of her life. We know that the greatest predictor of lifelong poverty for a woman is being a teen mom, period. Regardless of socioeconomic class, racial identity, it doesn't matter. Being a teen mom is going to be the greatest predictor of lifelong poverty for you. And it makes sense because of the obstacles that it creates in finishing your education, accessing a job. All of those things just become a lot harder when you have a little one to take care of. Our young women are smart and creative and funny and incredibly tenacious, and they have managed to navigate very, very, very challenging life circumstances. They've had trust violated by many or all of the adults in their lives. And so our goal is to help them use the coping strategies and all those wonderful skills that they've learned to navigate that life and use them to make positive choices in their life. People so often have this like us them mentality, and they think about the girls as them, like those girls over there. And the fact is that here it's us, it's we, we're a team. And you know, it's only by the grace of God that a lot of us haven't ended up where our girls are, you know, and that these are amazing, smart, talented, thoughtful, feeling, passionate girls and young women. And what they need is people who are going to support them and encourage them and provide them some structure so that they can be successful.
It's a beautiful home, right? It really, I think any of us would be comfortable and feel blessed to be able to live there. So as I said in the video, we serve young women between the ages of 14 and 24 who are experiencing an unsupported pregnancy. And I think when I say that, a lot of times people think about a girl in her senior year of high school who maybe made a couple of poor decisions, you know, had sex with her boyfriend, and now she's pregnant. And that's really not the young women that we serve. Those girls have moms and dads and aunts and uncles and a community of support around them to help them navigate and make positive choices for them. While each tapestry, each kind of piece of fabric that represents the life of the girls that we serve is different, there's some common themes and some common threads that run through those lives. So we see a significant amount of child abuse and child neglect that's happened. The young women that we serve have frequently spent most or all of their lives in foster care, which presents its own complications. A lot of times girls have been bouncing in and out of foster care, and the only time they were in school was when they were with their foster parents, and then they're back with their bio parents. So girls end up with a really disrupted educational journey. Young women have experienced typically a lot of sexual violence and domestic violence as well. And then between probably 85 and 95% of the women that we serve are survivors of human trafficking, which means that they've had some involvement in the commercial sex industry in some way, that that's been present in their life. And, you know, there's whole movements, there's whole organizations that are built around each one of those topics that I talked about. And so when you bring multiple factors together, when you bring those things present and those intersections of violence in someone's life, the obstacles that those create are incredibly challenging. And so we're going to add on top of that a baby. And I think everybody in this room can resonate with the idea of how challenging it is to have a little one. Pregnancy is challenging. Parenting is challenging. My mom talks about when they took my brother home from the hospital, you know, just looking at this child and thinking, oh my goodness, they're actually gonna let me take him home, you know, and we don't know what we're doing. And she was doing this as a stable, educated, financially resourced woman with a husband that was gonna come home at the end of the day and support her and with a home to live in. That's really not the story that our girls are coming from. So do you wanna put up the infographic for me? So it's like, wow, where do you start, right? How do you even begin to engage that? And so this is a kind of a neat representation that breaks down our program into three kind of distinct phases that happen. So the first phase, the first thing that we're looking at for the young women that we serve is how do we break that cycle? right? How do we help them create safety in their life and stabilize in their life? All of our young women are coming to us from either homelessness or a high degree of housing insecurity, so that could mean that they're sleeping under a bridge, they're sleeping in a car, or they're sleeping on a friend's couch or some other place that isn't typically safe. So for a lot of girls, that means that they're coming to us and they've been sleeping outside. They've been pregnant and sleeping outside, so just the process of coming into a home and sleeping in a bed, that's a huge transition for them. Just the idea of having access to food and water, like that can be a whole new experience for them. We had a girl who came to the house and she, we went for a walk. She had been there for 3 or 4 weeks. And I said, how's it going, right? Like, how's this feeling? And she had been sleeping under a bridge before she came to us. And she said, Becca, I'm not used to being able to go to the bathroom when I want to. I'm not used to being able to go to the kitchen and get a glass of water when I'm thirsty. And it was such a great reminder for me to say, like, oh, right, okay, yeah. Just the fact that you have a blanket to sleep under is a big change for you. So that first initial period of time when girls come, it really is about kind of creating a new normal for them, helping them learn. We've got 5 girls in a house who are either pregnant or parenting an infant. Living with a group of women is a transition, right? Like that's, woo, that's a process. It's not all summer camp. We really want to have that initial period of time to get really high levels of support, and we're creating a plan, right? What's going on for you? Do you have legal things that we need to address? Are you on probation, right? Do we need to take a look at that? How's your sobriety going? Are you able to be sober right now? Is that something we need to work on? Do we need to kind of assess what level of support you need to be able to get sober and stay sober? What's going on for you with your mental health struggles, right? How stable are you? What's going on? We have a counselor on staff that helps support them. What are your housing goals? What are your parenting goals? Are you going to choose to parent your baby? Are you going to think about adoption? What does that look like? What are your educational goals? Have you finished high school? For a lot of our girls, they haven't. And so how do we help support you in doing that? And thinking about what is this comprehensive plan going to be? But the most important part of that plan is that it's driven by the young women that we serve. Because I'm a great planner, but if somebody hasn't bought into that plan, then it's not going to be real effective. So young women come to us oftentimes with absolutely nothing. And so sometimes they show up with their purse, and that's it. So they come in, they get a welcome bag. We have shampoo and conditioner and soap and journals and a Bible's in there and everything that you would kind of want after you came home from a very, very long camping trip. What would you want to be able to get yourself comfortable and clean so you can have a good night's rest? One of the things that's on your donation list that you guys are going to receive is that we're collecting pajamas and underwear and socks and sports bras and things like that so that somebody can come in and put on a clean pair of clothes. Maybe it's projection on my part, but a clean pair of pajamas and a clean bed can change your life. Like it can be a pivotal thing. And so that's one of the things that we are collecting for the girls. And I would also remind people in a variety of sizes. When you're pregnant, your body changes a lot, and there's nothing more disheartening than trying to pull on a pair of sweatpants and having them not fit. Like that's a huge bummer. So they come in and we're helping them figure out how do they navigate life in a house full of other girls, how do they navigate life inside a home at all, starting to think about their goals. And one of the ways that we do that is that we have an advocate on staff. So we have our resident coordinator who lives on site, bless her heart, and she's there. But then we also have somebody that acts as an advocate for the girls and kind of acts like their emotional toolbox and helps them think about, okay, so I need some help at the doctor's office filling out this form, or how do I go to school and enroll in classes? Like she's there to help them through all of those systems and all of those processes. And then we kind of move into the rhythms of life, right? Like kind of that day after day, and that's sort of our transition phase, and that's where we see girls getting to just do life, right? So we're seeing girls graduate from high school. We had a girl who was the first member of her family to graduate from high school in January. Like, that's amazing, and that's a huge game changer, right? Going from high school dropout to high school graduate, it was really cute. I said, like, what are you, she was thinking about, does she want to go back to school or not? She's like, oh, Becca, I'm too old. I was like, honey, you're 19. Like, if you're too old, I should give up, because that's just, that's the, that's just not. And now she's looking at college, right? Like she's thinking about what are kind of the next steps for me? What does that look like? And they're able to do that in this really supported environment. And this is also the time when we start teaching life skills. So if you've been homeless for the last 8 years, if you left your house when you were 15 or 16 or sometimes even younger, there's some skills that you haven't learned along the way. Some of the things that we might take for granted, like how do you open the refrigerator and figure out what you're going to eat for dinner? Right? Like that's a skill that you have to learn. How do you grocery shop? If all you know is that food comes in a paper bag from McDonald's, then the process of cooking a dinner can seem really daunting. We had a girl who came and girls pick one night of the week and they cook for the whole house, and so they get to practice their cooking skills. And she said, well, I don't cook. And I said, well, here you do. And so we're having to figure that out. And so we talked about it a little bit more, and then it got to, I won't cook. I said, well, you know, that might go sadly for you. And so we like, let's think about this some more. And then we got to the crux of it, which was, I can't cook. I don't know how to cook. She had some learning disabilities, so like opening up a recipe and following those instructions, like those weren't skills that she knew how to do. And so when it said dice an onion or chop a tomato, she didn't know how to do that. So we got to walk through those skills in like bite-sized chunks with her and help her learn how to do that. We also do life skills classes around parenting and baby care. You guys all know that babies don't actually come with a manual, and so you have to learn, how do you take care of them, and what does that mean? And for young women who have never had that modeled for them, for young women who have never seen what a present, sober, connected mother looks like that nurtures her child, they haven't had that modeled for them anywhere in their life, those are skills that we have to teach along the way. We also put a really heavy emphasis on learning about healthy relationships and healthy boundaries. So does anybody know the Cloud and Townsend boundaries books? They're such good stuff. And so we do boundaries, we do boundaries with kids, and really helping the girls figure out what does it look like to have safe, healthy relationships. And then we get to help them put that into practice. So we had a girl whose dad was being really unhelpful, and he would send her text messages and say, the reason that your baby is sick is God's punishing you for past mistakes that you've made. She had had a child when she was 16, and as you might expect, a 16-year-old doesn't always make the best parenting choices, and so now she had that child was in foster care, and she had this second baby, and she was determined to do it differently, and she really was making it happen, and her baby got sick, because babies get sick, right? Like, that's just what happens. And so her dad's sending her these text messages, and she's trying to figure out what to do. And so then we got to talk about it in boundaries class and say, like, what are your options? What might that look like? And so she actually got to learn how to say to her dad, hey, what you're doing is upsetting to me, and if you don't stop, I'm going to have to block your phone number. And what do you know? He stopped. Like, it was amazing. And for her, that was a really pivotal time when she got to learn, how do I get to have a sense of who I am as a person and engage in safe, healthy relationships? So during this time, we have girls who, like I said, are finishing school and are doing life skills classes and doing all of these amazing things. But really, our end goal is, how do we help you move to a place of independence? Teen pregnancy is the greatest predictor of lifelong poverty for women in America, and we really want to see if we can change that narrative and change that story. So from the very, very beginning when girls come, we're saying, like, what's your plan? Where are you going to go? And as I said in the video, a goal for a 14-year-old is going to look different than a goal for a 24-year-old, which is why we do those really individualized plans. And so what we're seeing is that girls who are moving out and being in stable housing, stable permanent housing. So 92% of the young women that come to St. Child, when they exit, they're leaving to stable, secure housing, which is so encouraging. And the other piece that we really like to see is girls having an opportunity to give back. Like, how do you use your story and use your experiences in a way that's going to be life-giving and contributing to other people? I'm a firm believer that when we're able to use painful parts of our story, that we're able to change the way that we relate to those, right? Like, it gives us an opportunity to find some redemptive purpose in the suffering and pain that we've had in our lives. I think all of us can say that there have been times in our lives where we had struggles, and when we're able to put those to good use and we're able to speak into other people's lives, it can really be a changing experience for them. So, and getting to see that happen is just, it's just about the coolest thing ever. So we have a girl at the house who, she's got some struggles that are present for her, and she's got some legal struggles. She's having to testify in a court case against a family member that's perpetrated some pretty significant abuse against her and some of her sisters. And this is definitely a challenging time for her. But the opportunity for us to show up for her and be there for her and is just amazing. And she said, I didn't know there were people like you guys in the world. Like, I grew up and I had the family I was born into, and now I have the family that God meant for me, which is all of the people here at St. Child. And we've been able to help her see. And I said to her, you know what? You're going to get to be me for someone else really, really soon. And she's always, her eyes got big. She was like, really? I'm like, uh-huh, really? And she's already been able to put that into practice. She's already able to speak into the lives of other girls at the house who are having some similar struggles and be able to help them feel like they're not alone. So I want to tell you just a couple stories of some of the girls who have been through the house to kind of help you see how it all kind of comes together and what all of this looks like. So we had a young woman who came to us. She was like 12 weeks pregnant. She was very, very early in her pregnancy. And she grew up in the Midwest, and she had been adopted into foster care when she was about 5 years old and never really settled into her new family, never really felt like she was a part of her family, which is not an uncommon experience for kids who are in foster care, who are adopted, and always really had this idea of like, gosh, if I could just be connected with my mom, right? Like, this is gonna be this great thing. Well, she eventually did connect with her mom, and her mom introduced her to the world of methamphetamine. And so as typically happens when people start using, she ended up being arrested and was addicted really quickly. And so her foster mom picked her up from jail, drove her to the airport, and bought her a one-way plane ticket to Portland, where she knew nobody. She had $20 in her pocket and absolutely nowhere to go. And she found us, which was amazing. So when she came to the house, the palms of her hands were peeling, like the skin was peeling from all the toxicity of the drugs. And the skin on her scalp was peeling. And she had no resources. She had nowhere to go. And so we brought her in and said, all right, well, let's make this happen. And she's actually the young woman who graduated from high school this past January. And so I was sitting with her, and I said, what do you want to be? What do you want to do? And she said, well, I think I'm going to work in a restaurant. And I said, oh, that's great. Like, do you enjoy food, and do you enjoy serving people? And she said, no. Not particularly. And I said, oh, well, okay, maybe that's not the best plan. And I said, what else would you like to do? And she said, well, maybe I could work at like Macy's. And I said, well, that's great. That's a great idea. You know, do you like clothes and fashion and things like that? And she said, no, not particularly. And I said, huh, okay, well, anything in the world. What would you be? What could you do? And her eyes got all big, and she goes, oh. And I'm waiting for her to tell me she wants to be an astronaut, right? Like, this is, let's, okay. She says, I want to be an artist. And I said, I think we can make that happen. Like, you can be a struggling artist, right? Like, this is a realistic goal. This is something that you can actually do. And she just looked at me, and she said, I said, why does that seem like that you couldn't do that? And she said, because people all my life told me I couldn't do it. Like, nobody's ever told me that I can be what I want to be. And I said, kiddo, You can be anything you want to be. And you are made just the way you are with your talents and your skills and who you are on purpose, right? Your Heavenly Father created you exactly the way that you are with intention. And he looks at you right now and his heart delights in you. And to be able to speak that to her, to be able to speak that truth to her, and to watch her then gain some traction in her life is amazing. I was in Target a couple weeks ago, and I saw a girl who was actually at the house when I very, very first started. She was moving out. And so she was a survivor of human trafficking. She had been trafficked all across the country. From the time she was about 14, she had been trafficked. She was 23 or 24 when I met her. And she knew having this baby was... She knew, like, I got to make it different. I got to change my story. I've got to change it. And I think there was a part of her that said, I'm not worthy of changing who I am. But this baby is worthy of me changing who I am. And so she's got a long story. But the thing that I thought was so amazing is when I looked across Target and I saw her with her little 2.5-year-old baby, none of you would have ever known, right? This was just a mom walking through Target with her baby. And to be able to see that transformation, that when I met her for the first time and she was talking about her story and talking about her life, and she said, like, I always just thought this was my purpose, that selling sex was what I was meant to be. Like, this is what I was meant to do. And to be able to see her change that narrative and change that story for her, her life will always be challenging, right? She's a single mom. That's a tough road. That's always going to be hard for her. But to see her be able to change that, and you know what? Her daughter will only know her as a sober mom. Her daughter will only know her as a woman that's not being trafficked, that's not in the life, as a mom that works at Costco, right? Like, and we all get to be part of it in our own small way. And that's one of the really exciting things about getting to chat with groups like you, is that I get to invite you to be part of this process with us. So there's a few ways that people support the work that we do. One of the ways is that people support us financially, and that's a huge part of helping make the organization run. Sometimes people volunteer. So we have volunteers that teach the life skills classes that I was talking about, or that help with transportation with pregnant women and babies. As you can imagine, we have a lot of doctor's appointments that happen, and we've got to get people to those doctor's appointments. We have people who come and hold babies. But I will tell you that the very, very, very most important thing that people do to support the work that we do is that they are in prayer for us. They're in prayer for me because I need it all the time. They are in prayer for my staff, for my board. They're in prayer for the volunteers. But then they're also in prayer for the young women who are in the house. And we get to see prayers answered in some really, really amazing ways. So the girl who just graduated from high school, when she left the Midwest, she left a little warrant out for her arrest at that time as well. And I think it was just such a beautiful depiction of a teenage brain. Like, if I just leave, right, it'll be fine. I was like, oh boy. So that eventually surfaced. And this is a girl who said, like, I don't know about this whole God thing. Like, I don't know about that. Like, Christians are kind of weird. And I was like, well, you know, fair enough. And she said, I don't really like people telling me what to do. And I was like, well, you know, fair enough. But, you know, we're going to love on you and we're going to be praying for you. And she was kind of skeptical, like, I don't know about all that. And so this warrant appeared. And her public defender was a challenging man who I think was maybe a little burned out in his job. And he said, you left the state. And you weren't in touch with me, and so I'm not even gonna represent you. Like, this is too bad. You're gonna have to figure out a way to get back to the Midwest, and like, this is all on you. And so we said, okay, well, let's talk some more about that. And so we wrote some letters, and we got to engage that process, and but we also prayed about it. And not only did this public defender decide to not drop her case, but the judge dropped all of the charges. She had felony warrants out for her, which meant that she couldn't access
financial aid for school, that she couldn't access other support and other programs. And truly an answer to prayer happened. And for her, it wasn't just about that warrant going away or those charges going away, which was huge, but it was about a community of people caring enough about her to pray for her and support her and then seeing that answer to prayer. We have young women who have some real struggles. We have young women who are struggling to stay sober. So girls who are addicted to heroin, addicted to methamphetamine, that are using drugs as a coping mechanism for the trauma that they've experienced in their life. And having the support of people in prayer to help them stay sober is huge. We have young women who are struggling with really significant mental health diagnoses. We see an incredibly disproportionate number of young women who struggle with bipolar. Almost all of the girls that we work with have PTSD, other personality struggles, and things that are really a result of the trauma that they've experienced in their life. And so to achieve stability is something that they need a community of people supporting them and people who are in prayer for them. And they're brand new moms, and that's a huge challenge. And so having, again, a community of people that are in prayer for them and that support them is so life-giving and so life-changing. So I want to take a little bit of time and see if maybe anybody has any questions that maybe I can answer for you or any information that you might want to have about what we do. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So really, it really depends on what's happening for that young woman, and we really like to put the ball in her court about how much she wants that. For some girls, this is sort of, that was that chapter, and now I'm going to move on, and that's totally fine, and we'll support them with that. But then we have a lot of girls who love to stay in touch. I had coffee with a girl that graduated from our program yesterday, and so for some of them, they need some tangible support. For some of them, you know, diapers are expensive, or they need help finding some clothes for their little one, or they just need some help kind of thinking through, okay, I have these choices in front of me, what do I do? And so we offer that kind of support. And then sometimes girls need, you know, being connected to resources. Sometimes we've helped them stay connected to a counselor. It just really depends. Yeah. 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 So again, it's going to really depend on what's happening for that girl. Sometimes with girls come to us and there is actually a safe adult somewhere kind of lurking in the corner somewhere. And so trying to identify that person, bring them in, and then foster that relationship as much as possible. So some I've seen that happen where girls have been kind of living out of their brokenness and they've burned some bridges, and we're able to kind of help them repair some of those bridges. Girls come, they're sober, they're going to counseling. People are like, hey, wait a minute. I think, you know, I can step into that. For other girls, you know, sometimes helping them find maybe a family that they could live with or things like that is going to be a better fit for them. It really depends on where they're at. Honestly, most of the girls that we serve aren't in that 14 or 15-year-old category because we're really geared towards helping people move to independence. Like, that's really our end goal, is how do you become a contributing part of our community? And so sometimes 14-year-olds need a little bit more. They just need a different thing. Yeah. Yeah.
I have, like, two questions.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. How do you decide who's going to be placed and who's going to be
placed? Those are great questions. So the question was, how many girls can we serve, and kind of what's that intake process look like, and how do we decide who comes to the house and who doesn't? So we serve 5 young women at a time, which doesn't sound like a lot until you get 5 pregnant teenagers in a room together, and then you realize that's a lot. That's a lot of pregnancy happening, a lot of hormones fluctuating. And one of the things I like, too, about that number is that it allows it to feel like a community and stays a home rather than sort of like a facility. So our intake process has kind of multiple steps. So throughout that process, we're really trying to figure out, are we the right fit for you, and are you the right fit for us? So initially, we're going to say, are you able to be safe with yourself? Are you able to be safe with other people? What are your mental health needs? What are your addiction needs? So sometimes somebody is not able to be safe with themselves, right? Like if you're feeling suicidal, like we need to help you stabilize with that in another place. If you're not able to be safe with other people, right? So if kind of your go-to coping strategy is punching people, we can't have that with babies and pregnant women in the house. So those are, again, going to be places we're going to try to help them connect somewhere else where they're going to be able to get the level of support that they need. We do drug and alcohol assessments for pretty much everybody that comes to the program, and we have a relationship with Serenity Lane. So if somebody needs inpatient treatment, we can help them get a scholarship and get the treatment that they need. We will never offer someone a space with us that contradicts the treatment recommendation that they have. We're always going to comply with that treatment recommendation. But we have had people who assessed for inpatient treatment, and then we were able to say, like, finish your 28 days or whatever it is that you need to do, and we'll have a place for you to go afterwards. So sometimes that's worked well. So the other piece, too, is, like, what's their level of buy-in, and are they ready to make change? Some people, yes. Some people, no. And so kind of trying to figure out, do you want what we have to offer you? I've had girls, honestly, who have come and taken a look at the rules and said, I want no part of that. Like, I don't want to have to tell people where I'm going and what I'm doing. And in which case we say, like, that's totally okay. We've had girls who have come and said, I don't want to live with your rules. And then they said, just kidding. I actually do need the support that you have. So that's kind of that process. As far as, the last homelessness count that they did in Multnomah County identified about 230 adolescent girls who were homeless on that night when they did that count. So adolescent between 14 and 24, so the age range of the girls that we serve, and it's estimated that about 50% of those girls are either pregnant or parenting an infant. So the need is huge, and that was just in Multnomah County. The need is really, really significant, and so we kind of go through that process, and if during that process we realize you're not, like, this isn't a match, then we're going to try to help you figure out another place to go, and we have relationships with some other shelters and places like that where we can refer people. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, probably in the long-term plan, that might be something we would look at. I have a few ideas about what I would love that to be. I think second to what we provide, one of the biggest felt needs that I see in our community is around women with little ones, not infants, but they're like 2 years old, and, you know, finding affordable housing is a huge challenge. And so being able to support those young women in finishing their education, you know, what does it mean to get a college degree, right? Like, how could that change kind of the trajectory of your life and what your options are? Like, that's huge. So some of those things would be kind of maybe like a second step after us would be great. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so the question is, do we have girls who are coming from abusive situations where there's kind of a dangerous abuser in the picture? And the answer is yes, we do. It's one of the reasons why we keep the location of the house private. So it's not, you know, it's private. It's not like uber, uber secure, but it is a private location. And the house is actually located, you could see in the video, there were sort of all the big trees and everything. It's located at the end of a dead-end street, down a long driveway. So you're not going to, like, accidentally drive by the house. That's just not going to happen. Sometimes when you know where you're going, it's hard to find it, which is a plus. And the girls, the other girls in the house really get that. So we've only had one girl who kind of violated that rule of keeping the location of the house private, because they all get, like, we need to keep this place safe. We also have a great relationship with our local law enforcement as well, and so that's helpful. Yeah. And also, is there a situation where a girl gets to the year after baby's born, and there's nowhere for her to go? So that's kind of a two-part answer to the question is, what happens at the end of the year if they don't have anywhere to go? So we begin with the end in mind 100% of the time. So you haven't even moved into the house, and we're already talking to you about where you're going to go when you leave. We're already saying in our interview process, what are your goals? Where are you headed? What's this going to look like? And that's one of the benefits, too, of the weekly goal setting, so that we're constantly checking in, so we don't end up 6 or 8 months down the line and realize we haven't moved forward towards our goals. Like, this is really problematic. So we have lots of, like, kind of safeguards in place to keep that from happening. The other part of that answer is that we're entirely privately funded, so we don't receive any government grants or government dollars, which means that we get to be two things: unapologetically Christian, and we also get to meet people right where they're at. So if we come to the end of your year and you had 2 more months makes a lot of sense for you because your housing's about to happen or whatever it is, the moon aligns at that point, then we get to say, great, you get to stay for another 2 months because that's what really makes sense for you. So we're celebrating our 21st year of being in existence, which is exciting. Somebody earlier said, oh, that means that you could serve the babies that were born. And I was like, oh, please say no. multiple generations of St. Child children, we don't need that. And I'm sorry, what was the other? We serve probably about 15 girls a year. It's probably about the number of girls that we see come through. Maybe 250, something like that. Yeah. Any other questions? So I want to take my last just couple minutes and just tell you about some of the girls we have in the house right now. So I'm not actually going to share their names because we like to keep their, just for some privacy reasons. But we actually have 3 girls with little ones in the house right now, which means it's loud and busy and exciting. So I told you about one of them. She recently graduated from high school. She is 20 years old now and has a sweet, sweet, sweet little baby girl that she's taking care of. So she graduated from high school, and she is now actually in the process of looking at PCC, at going to school and figuring out who does she want to be and what does that look like for her. She is here without really any support. So, she doesn't really have, we are her community here in Portland. And I think sometimes she feels that pretty acutely. I think she feels like she wishes she had a bigger community of support, but it's really been fun to get to see her engage with us and to get to connect with the staff and kind of have some of that, Beth, who's our resident coordinator, is she's a mama bear on steroids. Like, she's great. But she's really gotten to act like a mother to this young woman in a lot of ways, and we've gotten to see a lot of healing happen in kind of like a reparative parenting sort of way. The next young woman is the one that I told you about, who's having to testify about some legal matters in her family. Her little boy is 6 months old. The first little girl's, the baby's name is Devlin. Our second baby is Joshua, and he is a densely packed chunk of baby. Like, he is just, you pick him up and you're like, oh, I need to do some more working out because you're a heavy boy. And his mom has just gotten in the last 6 weeks, just got a job. So she's working and being a mom and getting to figure out what that looks like for her. She's doing some janitorial work at a church, which is respectable work, but not what she would hope for. And so she would really love to find a job doing some, working in a fashion boutique or something like that. And so that's really our prayer for her. She's a woman who gets a lot of comfort from her faith and is really grounded to her spiritual journey. And so it's fun to get to encourage her in that as well. The last young woman I'm going to tell you about just last night finished her outpatient treatment. So, which is a huge accomplishment and something that she didn't ever really think she was going to be able to do. Her little boy is named Brayden, and he is about 4 months old, and it's a little bit less densely packed than Joshua, but still very cute nonetheless. And so she's really figuring out, what do her next steps look like, and what does she want to be, and what does she want to do? And so we're getting to encourage her in that journey as well. We have about 4 girls that we're in the process of interviewing right now for the 2 other spaces, so those beds will be moved into soon by young women who are expecting little ones. Yeah.
Take with them the, like, any baby
So the question is, do they get to take the baby gear with them? So for the most part, yes. So there are like some bassinets and things like that that we just want to make sure we have enough of on hand. But girls come in and they get to pick out a bedding set, because that's one of the fun things, right, about being a woman is we get to express ourselves with our fashion and our lives look like. And so we people donate sets of bedding and they get to pick out what they want. And then we kind of do arts and crafts and have some things that they get to decorate the room with. So they get to take all of that with them that they want and then try to help them, you know, what is it that you need for this little one? And if they're moving into their own apartment, then we can help them get that apartment set up as well. Yeah. No, typically not. So that's usually something we kind of have to piece together at that time. So sometimes, like if they're going to a lactation consultant or something like that, we can get like a pump either paid for through insurance or something like that, and we can get some of those other supplies paid for. Sometimes we have people donate things, although oftentimes we have people donating like expired baby food and things like that, which we don't use at that point. So. Mm-hmm, we do. So we have a garage at the house that we use, and then we actually have a storage unit that's been donated to us. So we're able to kind of stockpile things in there, which is helpful. Yeah. Yeah. It depends. So long, we're always looking at how do we help you find a sustainable solution to this problem and use it as a skill building and learning opportunity. So we're always trying to help them access their own pool of support. Is there an aunt or a mom or, you know, somebody somewhere that can help you with childcare long term? Because that's a big rug to pull out from underneath someone if they move out and all of a sudden they have to figure out their own childcare. So in a global sense, we're always trying to help them figure out what is a sustainable way to meet this need. In the short term, we have volunteers and then sometimes a staff help with childcare as well. So I have a staff member watching a baby this morning. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. So it's going to depend. Yeah, it's going to depend. So like if you're donating underwear or things like that, we'd really... We're going to ask that it be new. diapers, we want those to be new. But like if you have a gently used like pack and play or baby clothes, things like that, then that's fine. I think really it's about looking at it and saying, is this going to send the message to someone that they're special, or is it going to send the message that you get like, yeah. Yeah, Marty. Yes, we do also do maternity clothes donations as well. As I said, a lot of times the girls come with, like, nothing, no clothes. And so being able to offer them some options is really great.
Okay. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so I'm just going to touch on how we're going to do this. So I have a list here. If after I'm done up here, if the group leaders can come up and get enough for your group, there are 5 groups that are going to be doing Mother's Day baskets for the moms. And those leaders already have the little slips of paper with items that you can bring for that. You do not need to bring a basket. I know this is different than what we talked about initially this morning. So the groups doing Mother's Day baskets, just bring your items in a bag and then... Tara Jett, did she have to leave? I think she left. Tara Jett is going to collect all the items and then put them together in baskets and then give them to St. Child. And then the other items are, it's just a list of household items, but there are specific items that would be particularly helpful, which are, and this, I'll highlight these and send them out in the follow-up email. So we'll attach this, and I'll highlight the ones that they are more in need of. But things like robes, slippers, new pajama sets, sports bras, underwear, socks, and new underwear, obviously, and socks. and diapers they always need more of. And then, like she said, if you have a pack and play that you don't need anymore and it's in good condition, maybe you could bring that. Strollers, I'm sure, like just various things like that are totally welcome if they are in good condition. And then Tara Jett, her husband, they own the business Two Men in a Truck. I don't know if you see the like truck driving around or the sign. So they donate their services to St. Child. So they help moms move in and out. And they have generously offered to help transport all the items. So you need to bring your items back here next week. 2 weeks from now at our next meeting. And then Tara will be here to collect them all and deliver them to St. Child. If you can't be at the next meeting, Tara has also offered to have her house be a drop-off location. And so in the follow-up email, we'll send her address and phone number. And then you can, if it's easier for you to just swing by and drop it off at her house, that's totally fine. And she actually lives in a great location for getting off of I-5. So it's very handy. I think that is everything. So four groups will be doing this household items list, and then five groups will be doing the Mother's Day gift baskets. If you're doing a Mother's Day gift basket, you can also do this if you want. I encourage everybody to take one of these just so you can kind of see what the needs are. And then if you have things that you know you're not going to use, then you can pass them along.